Craftsman Days are here at Lowe's with big savings on the tools you need. Right now, get a free select tool when you buy the Craftsman V20 2-Pack Battery Kit. Whether it's the backyard, the bathroom, or beyond, Craftsman has the tools to help you power through and get the project done right. Because DIYing is unpredictable, but your tools shouldn't be. Shop Craftsman at Lowe's today. Valid through 6/18 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
Smiley Kaufman for 61. Wow.
I'm Smiley Kaufman, and this is The Smiley Show.
Welcome back to another episode of The Smiley Show. Smiley, fresh off a rousing wedding weekend.
Yes.
Love to get a little report on that. And good old Vestavia out there in Birmingham. I'm fresh off maybe the shortest West Coast trip of all time. I went out to the Pebble Beach, went out Thursday night and came back on Saturday, but Friday was well worth the price of admission to hang out a little bit there, to see some of the courses, see some cool people. So that's where we're at. How are you feeling post wedding? Let's start there.
I probably like a 5 out of 10.
Okay.
You know, I would say probably not quite the brain power that I'm normally operating with, but for the most part, I'm in a good place. Got to watch. I mean, it was a great Sunday. You know, you have Pebble Beach on the TV. Unfortunately, it was a perfect day here in Birmingham. It was like 70 degrees, sunny. And so I felt obligated to go outside, but also felt pretty obligated to be on my couch too. So it was kind of a lose win kind of deal there.
But did they play Shout at the wedding?
I think. Maybe. we did karaoke after the wedding. That's what I'm hoarse from, but just a little.
Did we get little Drops of Jupiter train action in?
Uh-huh. Yep.
The go-to.
Sure did.
Did that for you.
And I did one more too. I got to think about which one it was.
as has been documented on the show, Drops of Jupiter, that's the Smiley Kaufman go-to karaoke song.
It is. It is.
I hope we're. I think back to last year at the Zurich and Rory singing Don't Stop Believing. I hope we're able to bless the internet at some point with the Smiley singing Drops of Jupiter video.
Yeah.
In that fashion.
It's my New Year's resolution every year to finish Drops of Jupiter without losing my voice and or just get through it without just like feeling like my throat's going to die. And yeah, I saw some videos and I was straining to get through it last night.
Yes. Yes. I mean, that's tail end of a wedding. I wouldn't have it any other way for you.
Yeah. Very congrats good. To Big James, Cunningham's, Faith. It was a lot of fun.
Love that. Love that. Yeah. Well, I mean, should we dive right into Pebble Beach?
Tell me a little bit more about your trip, I guess. I'm curious to hear. Did you get to tee it up at all, or were you just out there doing the dinner and just hanging out?
15 and a half holes of Cypress, which is always nice to get out there. But it was on Friday where the weather was kind of trending towards nasty.
Okay.
So my caddy, it was a quick one. It was like a solo round. So just me and the caddy. And
that's incredible.
It was just so nice. I'll never play it like that. You know, ever again, never have, never will again. But
it's like you own the place.
We were both laughing, walking from 9 green to 10 tee after I pulled my approach shot to the top shelf with a pin on the front at 9.
And then, is that the one? So is your granddad's house? Like, which one is the Dalek right? Is that 9?
That's 8.
That's 8. So 9's at par 4.
Drivable par 4. Yes.
And then is that the hole you're talking about right now?
Correct. Okay. Yes. Yeah. And D-green my putt. They had some of the toughest pins.
Oh, really?
I'd ever seen it. Yeah. It was, I think I D-greened on no less than 3 holes and like not bad shots either. Just like hitting, basically it was the fault of my approach shot that just left me boned. And I was like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do here, you know, and ended up off the front. But, you know, that's Cypress. Like I find that course, the way I play the game of golf, I find that course extremely, extremely difficult. So
yeah, I guess you've played Cypress a bunch. I don't know how many times you have, but I'm curious, what do you think besides just the scenery that separates Cypress Point, you know, where people, you know, just want to come back? I mean, obviously we're going to see 15 and 16 and play those holes in 17, but is there anything about the course that every time you play, you're excited to play for that reason?
I think Alistair McKenzie, who designed this course, was a medic in the Boer War. And while he was serving in that war, he did a lot of studying of military camouflage. And then he took those principles and he applied them. He also assisted, you know, he and Bobby Jones designed Augusta National. So he went out and a lot of the courses he designed, he does this sort of camouflage in, you know, really all shots, but especially off the tee of, you know, trying to kind of direct you and, you know, to the spots where you, the safe spots look like there's trouble. And the spots that look like they're safe, they're actually, you know, vice versa. You know what I'm saying there. Mm-hmm. But basically, I just find the course design to every single shot you have to be so switched on because it's thinking about where you want to carefully place it, but also thinking about what that does to your angle on the next approach shot. Mm. You know, the green complexes being as tricky as I feel like they are. And then on top of that, it's Poe. So it can be kind of random and bumpy. And when they get them running, it's, you know, you breathe on the thing and it's going, you know, 10, 15 feet. So I just find it, you know, even when I don't play well, I just love every single shot I stand over. I've got like three or four or five different sort of factors that I'm thinking about of, you know, I could do this thing, but then that kind of leads me to a bad spot here. And do I want to try this shot? And I don't pull the shots off a lot of the time, but it's just fun to kind of go through that exercise on a course where you're just two hands on the wheel the entire time. And then on top of that, some of the most beautiful scenery you can have on a golf course in all of America. Well, so it's a delight.
What would be your favorite hole and you can't pick 15 or 16 or 17?
That's a great question. That's a great question because I
think mine's seven.
That's a good shout. A little par three uphill. That's a really tricky one. I just
love the bunkering on the right, the angle. It's just, I think that's such a good par three.
I think, and maybe it's just because it's you know, right there near my grandparents' house, and it's the one where when we kind of walk outside as kids and see. But I just love eight, where they're just a series of such interesting shots. Where the tee shot, it's that hard dog leg right for people who haven't been, you know, played Cypress, haven't seen the pictures, but it's basically you're standing on the tee and you're looking at a fairway that goes out and then just hard L's to the right. And there's like a sand dune that's just slowly kind of creeping up higher and higher in the distance. And so basically you have all different sorts of tee options depending on how much of that corner you want to cut. But then you're hitting down into a fairway that probably there's a strip that's maybe 20 yards long and then it slopes down into a lower tier. And shoot, if you really blow it all the way through, you could end up a nine fairway on the bottom. But it's like picking a line and a distance that you want to end up on. And then you're hitting this approach shot up the hill, depending on where you've landed, there could be a greenside bunker in the way and a green with like three or four different tiers on it. So yeah, like
I spun it back off of the green last time I played. I thought I hit a pretty good shot in there. Things so elevated and it's just hard to get it on the right section.
I hit a two iron, that new Strixon two iron, good, but it's like so good that it rolled down. Mm. And then it was a back right pin. And kind of, I think I hit like a pitching wedge.
Was it the greens firm or were they soft? Or
They were firmer than I expected for a rainy weekend.
Gotcha.
And okay. So I kind of hit it up there and it just rolled on the back edge of the green, but I was like up on the correct tier and then missed like took a little bump off the fringe, tapped in for par. But I mean, it's just a really fun hole, I think. It's an interesting hole. And so it's
7 and 8. That's a good little stretch right there.
That's
7, 8, 9.
That's our corridor. And then 9's a blast, too.
Yeah. Isn't it kind of crazy to you that Rory has not played Cypress until this week?
So crazy. So that's another thing. So it was really, really cool in the broadcast as Rory's on 18, finishing out the win, to hear Jim Nantz shout out my granddad, Sam Reeves, or just, you know, he's those who've been connected for a long time. It's a super cool relationship to observe. And, you know, you got to kind of pinch yourself just being around those types of people all the time. And so going out this week and playing for the first time, my granddad played with Rory, Adam Scott, and Rasmus Højgaard, who, by the way, delightful human being. Loved, got to know him a little bit this week.
I don't think
really,
I
really enjoyed him. Really, really cool guy.
Are they from Denmark?
Denmark, yeah. Rasmus Nikolai, both from Denmark. So playing for the first time there this week, and Jim mentioned that in the broadcast. And then that dinner on Friday was cool to see. A lot of mojo coming off that dinner.
This is a dinner that your dad or your granddad hosts.
Yes,
pretty much every year that week.
So we're gonna keep the majority of what happened at that dinner. But there, I'll share a few pieces from it, you know, just for a little bit of flavor here to kind of get you filled in. First of all, saw Andrew Novak and his wife, Maddie, who said to say hello to you. Lovely. As Maddie used to book your travel when you were on tour.
Yes, she's the best. She dealt with, you know, I wasn't great at any of that before. Now I am. I enjoy booking travel now. And I told her this the other day. She's like, I'm so proud of you. I was like, yeah, I'm proud of myself.
It was super cool to see Andrew and tell him like, hey, man, you're playing awesome golf right now. Can't wait to see you keep going. And he was there with his partner, Philippe Lafont. They won the Pro-Am portion of this tournament. Philippe's a Cypress member.
That's a really elite cool name. Dude. You said Philippe what?
Philippe Lafont.
That is elite.
Yes, he is. And he's like, he's a super interesting, super cool dude. I played against him with my granddad and the Cypress father son. So I got to hang out with him for 9 holes. Super cool guy. He and Andrew won the Pro-Am section of it. So cool to see them. We celebrated Akshay Bhatia's 23rd birthday. Wow. Brought a cake out. Everyone's saying happy birthday to him. Akshay was there. Akshay played with my aunt Ansley.
What players were there?
So I mentioned Rory and Shane. I saw Adam was there as well. And the one and only piece of conversation I had with him is just expressing my condolences to his Ball Frogs on their last year Jupiter Lynx squad and TGL. But he says they're going to be back with a vengeance. I believe him. He did. It was pretty cool. Like he said, the cool thing about it was he didn't expect to care that much. Like coming down the stretch, kind of like we talked about on the show, it's like they really were kind of working their way into this thing being a really cool, you know, having fun, but also competing. And so I thought that was super cool. And then Rasmus was there. Akshay was there. I think I hit most of them. I'm sure. Oh, Nick Dunlap was there.
Oh, nice.
God, I love Nick. Nick was the most animated I saw all night was he was talking about a boat he got. So he got a Jupiter and he got a boat and he's talking about fishing offshore and his favorite spots to fish. I'm a huge
He's an outdoorsman.
He really is.
He's like he likes being in the woods or he likes having a fishing pole in hand.
Yeah. So it was a really cool night. It was cool to talk to those guys and then hanging with I'm such a huge Stephen Sweeney fan. By the way, to talk to him about, you know, we got some plans in the works, but that putting studio down there.
Yeah, let's go check it out.
I think we need to go check that putting studio out. I think that'd be a really, really cool thing for the audience. We can get a little video camera going down there. So it was a really cool night. I think for my granddad, he's 90 now. I mean, he's turning 91 this year. And so it's you kind of cherish these things, you know, when you get to kind of do it. But it was really cool of Jim to give him that shout out. And just, you know, it's a special place for our family and a special tournament. So cool to be fly on the wall for some portion of that.
What did Rory shoot? Any idea?
I don't know. I do not know what they scored.
Did you hear of any like low scores from pros at Cypress this week?
I know they have the match. I know the match was my granddad and Adam Scott, the Broomstick Boys,
okay,
against Rory and Rasmus, the Ryder Cuppers. So, and it was. I'm told that Rory and Rasmus were up early, but then those brooms got real hot coming down the stretch, and then they ended up having it. I think those guys.
I just ordered that book, The Match.
Yes,
I haven't read it yet, and I'm so excited to read it on Tuesday when I get on my flight to Phoenix.
And Scotty was obviously out there with Ted Scott.
Fun.
Meredith and Bennett came out to walk for a few holes, and
what's cool, so cool, like, is just that. And we're going to get into this whole discussion as far as just, you know, Pebble Beach goes and the importance of Rory winning at an iconic venue like this and how good it was for the PGA Tour today. But for the fact that I think the goal of the signature events or the PGA Tour was to try to get all the best players playing in the same place and at their best venues and best events. And so with that being said, it's kind of nice to know when you get Pebble Beach on TV, you're not having to like strain your eyes at the leaderboard. Like it's the who's who of golf. They're all there outside of Xander Schauffele being hurt. And of course we understand the LIV guys that we'd love to have. Rory said at the press conference earlier this week about 4 or 5 guys. And it kind of triggered the LIV crowd of saying, oh no, there's like 28 guys that should be, you know, you should be saying Rory, but that's another discussion.
Well, I think it's a really good place to start because we're going to talk about you know, Rory winning early this season. Could this be a big year for him? I kind of just want to start with him, but from a different context of just the comments he made throughout the week about how special this place is. So he said immediately upon winning the first question that, you know, it was really special to win at one of the cathedrals of golf. And earlier in the week, he had a quote that said, "I think really good venues are a big part of the storyline. When we go to major championships, especially a U.S. Open and an Open championship, I always feel like the golf course is a big part of the storyline heading into Thursday. Sometimes on the PGA Tour, that isn't the case because whether you play a run-of-the-mill TPC or whatever it is, it just isn't that interesting. So to come back to Pebble Beach time and again and play Spyglass, I think Spyglass is a really, really good golf course. To play these two golf courses, it's definitely two of the best that we play all year." So
only here's argument, here's an argument here,
okay,
is that he's never played this event, you know, besides, did he play last year for the signature event?
I think he played last year, yes.
But before that, never supported this event. So you can make that argument and say, well, why didn't you play it in the past, I guess?
It's a fair one. I think, and if we can jump into this exercise right now, because this is something that I have for you, and I'd really love to get your insight. I think a lot of people would be interested in this. Is I'm going to share my screen right now. So if you're listening on podcasts and you want to hop in and join us on YouTube, now would be a great time to do it. Is that I have a list of all of the PGA Tour venues, and so I made a couple of exclusions. All right, so I did not include any major venues on this list. I did not include any one-off venues. So, for example, I did not include Philly Cricket this year, which is hosting the Truist, because Quail Hollow is the, you know, the place that tournament is normally hosted, but it's hosting the PGA Championship this year. I included Riviera, even though we'll not be holding this year's version of the Genesis because of the fires in Los Angeles. I omitted events like the Canadian Open and the BMW Championship that have rotating venues, and I omitted opposite field events and fall events. But here's what I want to do, Smiley, is in like eye doctor office visit fashion, I want to start with Pebble Beach. I want to go through with each of these courses, and you tell me whether it ranks above or below that course, and we're just going to start making a list here. And I think where I'd love to end up is like, what do we have of our top five or top 10 courses on this list? And does that feel like the right amount of good venues for the best tour in the world? So we have Pebble Beach, Kapalua. Better or worse than Pebble Beach, in your opinion?
Worse.
Okay, so we'll go Kapalua there. Waialae, better or worse than Kapalua?
It's better in Kapalua.
Okay, and then better or worse than Pebble?
It is, yes, you're right. It's perfect. Okay. Right in between Pebble and Kapalua.
Okay. Pete Dye Stadium course, better or worse than Kapalua?
It's oh gosh, man. When do I start triggering the haters here? Because I'm thinking about putting this above Pebble.
Wow, I love it. No, this is great. This is your list. You get to make whatever you want it to be. Well, I'm assuming it's above Kapalua and Waialae then, right?
The only reason why I would say that, yeah, it's above Pebble. You gotta hit more shots.
I love that. Okay, great. All right, so now let's go Torrey. Torrey.
I mean, Pebble. Just think about it. Like it's incredible. It's an iconic venue. Like we talk about. It's you know, a lot of wedge shots. Really, really small greens. The weather kind of has to play a factor for it to be somewhat difficult. You know, you could play Pebble when it's firm, and that's when it's great. Like when Pebble's firm, it's great. But when we watch it on TV for this event, this was the firmest I've seen it. It actually had like a bit of bounce to it, but for the most part, you're zipping things back. So we're comparing this Pebble Beach AT&T week. I think the players is a better golf course for when they play it. Now, if you say the U.S. Open Pebble Beach, it's above the stadium. So that's
got it. That, okay, good distinction.
Sorry, I had to defend that so hard.
Well, I mean, and also the other thing I forgot to mention here is that we're just using the marquee course of these multi-course events. So I don't La Quinta on here, I don't have Spyglass on here. But I'll even say I love Pebble Beach. I mean, I grew up in Central California, went over there, played a bunch. You know, we went and shot a video of Spyglass last year. Like, I think Spyglass is just as good as Pebble, if not better in some respects. I think it's a more interesting golf course that calls for a wider variety of golf shots. It's more challenging. And it's just like it suffers from being reverse Cypress in a way. I'm not saying Spyglass is as good as Cypress by any stretch. But what I'm saying is that Cypress takes you into the forest and you do the whole thing in Del Monte Forest, and then you come out and you're along 17-mile drive, you're along the ocean, and it's this grand finish, except for, you know, people rag on 18 to Cypress, but you have to go back up and in to go to the clubhouse, right?
Yeah.
Spy starts you out in the ocean and then winds you back in the Del Monte Forest. So it's like this anti-climax for people who want those views. But I find some of the most interesting holes at Spy to be the ones you play in the Del Monte Forest. And I think it's the optics on it, you know, I think it's a great course, but I think it's, you know, like I put it up there anyway. That's a tangent. So let's take Torrey here. So Torrey above Kapalua
or below? Yeah, it's going to be in between Wailea and Pebble.
Perfect. All right. TPC Scottsdale, where are we putting this one?
TPC Scottsdale is going to be below Wailea for me.
Okay.
I think Wailea is a bit of a better golf course than Scottsdale. It's just TPC Scottsdale's never really, like, from just the shots that you hit out there, there's too many holes that I have issues with. It's not a perfect 18 holes. It's a really cool stretch, that 15, 16, 17. I think those three holes rival any three as far as entertainment goes on the PGA Tour. But when you talk about just the rest of the golf course, it's just kind of blah to me.
Yeah, I mean, listen, Wailea is a Seth Rainer. I think that's no argument from my end of the camera here. Mm-hmm. All right, Riv.
Okay, so Riv would be, it's going to be below Pebble Beach and above Torrey Pines.
All right, I like it. This is going to be a great embrace debate list. Vedanta Vallarta.
That's going to be below Kapalua.
Okay. All right. PGA National. Now, hold on a second. You have to rate this on course quality, not on how bad it beats you up.
So what I love about this place is that the quality shots that you have to hit to win this event, you know, there's penalty areas just about on every hole you're trying to avoid. Just think about the Honda growing up as kids, when we watched Rory, we watched Tiger, and all the like the big time moments and shots you have to hit on that golf course elevates it to me to where when you're watching on the TV, you don't know where the golf ball is going to end up when it's in the air. That's I think with that factoring in from playing it, the shots that you have to hit, it's close to being above Riv in my mind.
Wow. Okay. So
just from we're talking about factoring in the shots that you have to hit, yeah, and then the entertainment factor as far as watching it, like Riviera is amazing to play. It's a really hard golf course, but I always thought Riviera is kind of boring to watch. Like it's incredible. Like it's a great piece of architecture. It's really fun to play, but there's not a whole lot going on besides that 10th hole. It's just, it's kind of boring to me, like watching on TV. I don't know if that's a hot take or not, but I would, you know, when we're putting all these factors into a big pot here, it has, for me, PGA National is a more fun venue from a TV standpoint, watching it and playing it, and the cringe and all those factors of you having to, you know, try to pull off these shots down the stretch. So I know that's weird one. PGA National slipping up there. I would say some years it's PGA Nationals probably hasn't been in the best of shape at times, but when it's in really good shape, I think if you had all the players playing that event, I think you'd be in for some high drama.
All right. So we have PGA National above Riv. And then now we're going Bay
that sounds,
Hill.
That sounds so terrible to say. I bet people are just rolling their eyes at that. But
this is such an amazing list. Pete Dye Stadium, Pebble Beach, and PGA National are the top three. Then Riv, then Torrey. I love it. I love it. It's so good. All right. Where are we going with Bay Hill?
Again, Bay Hill is... It's... This is a hard one, man, because there's a lot of holes I really like at Bay Hill, and then there's a lot of holes I'm just like, you know, a lot of players don't like Bay Hill. They wouldn't play there if they didn't have to, but there's
because it's other, just a grind. Like just,
it's just
know.
A grind, and it's become too difficult. I know people will roll their eyes at that these guys shoot however many under most weeks, but it's so challenging, and the greens get so firm and so fast. And for me, I think Bay Hill is close to Torrey Pines, and I would say I like playing Torrey Pines more than Bay Hill, so we're okay. going to slot it in behind there.
So above YLI, below Torrey Pines, currently sixth on your list. This is so good. Just to give everyone a recap, we have 10 courses on the board thus far. We're just about
Bay
to go
Hill's
to Sawgrass.
Bay Hill's is not in the top half. This is a tough scene.
Curlis, P-Dye Stadium Course, Pebble Beach, PJ National, Riviera, and Torrey Pines are your top five. And then Bay Hill, YLI, TPC Scottsdale, Kapalua, and Vedanta Villarta. So now, TPC Sawgrass, where are we putting this course? I know you love this one.
Oh, wait. So the first one you did, the Pete Dye Stadium course, I thought this was the Players. Sorry, I heard Stadium course and I didn't even bat an eye at thinking. So the Pete Dye Stadium course, that's the La Quinta.
That's one of the Amex.
Jeez, man. Like, Pete Dye Stadium course. You could see why I thought it was TPC Sawgrass here. Right.
This
is
good.
That's a weird way to call TPC Sawgrass.
This is really good because this is going to be like the massive twist in the middle of this. People are like listening to this and thinking like, what is he talking about? All right. So let's first appropriately rank Pete Dye Stadium course at the Amex. Where do we want that course?
My gosh. That is going to go, I would say it's right around TBC Scottsdale, and I think I'm going to slide it in above TBC Scottsdale.
Okay. And then I'm assuming Sawgrass now goes to the top of the list.
Yes.
Great. Okay. You mentioned the Players earlier, and I thought you were alluding to when we got to that point. This list isn't chronological order, by the way, in case you ever feel like you lost the spot. That's the way I did that. So, okay. So let's refresh here. Everyone who thinks Smiley's lost his mind and or loves the Amex, TBC Sawgrass, Pebble Beach, PGA National, Riv, Torrey Pines, your new top five. Okay, now, Innisfruit Copperhead.
Ooh, it's really good. Let's put it just right above YY.
Okay, all right. Memorial Park, where they moved in Houston, where they moved the Texas Open.
Yeah, it's put it above Vedanta.
Okay, all right. TPC San Antonio.
TPC San Antonio, I would say is for me, it's going to be kind of middle to the back part, kind of a boring watch. It's the front nine is just kind of so different feeling to the back nine to me, but you got to drive it really good out there. It's put it above Kapalua and below TPC Scottsdale.
Okay. Harbortown.
Ooh, Harbortown's great. Yeah. Let's put that above Torrey Pines.
Oh, love that. I love that. Okay. Now, a couple TPCs in a row here. TPC Louisiana.
Yeah, that's also going to be near the bottom. So you can put that above Memorial.
Okay, above Memorial. All right. Should I just put TPC Craig Ranch right at the top?
You can put that right smack dab at the bottom there, bro.
Okay, all right. Now we're going to Quail Hollow next.
Okay, Quail Hollow is interesting because, you know, when they play a major championship, it feels like it has a different level of difficulty as far as like what they do with the rough and how it's normally treated with a typical Wells Fargo. This year it's obviously the PGA Championship, but for a typical year, I would say that I like it more than Bay Hill, but it's a very comparable as far as just that category goes. So I would put it in between Torrey and Bay Hill.
Okay. That's its seventh on your current list. Mm-hmm. Okay. So our new updated top five, TPC Sawgrass, Pebble Beach, PGA National, Riv, and Harbortown. Now we're going to Colonial, another historic course.
Can I switch?
Yeah, of course.
So I really like Harbortown a little bit more than PGA National.
Okay.
So let's go and put that at three and just slide PJ National down. Yeah, there you go.
I love this. It's like an updating poll, like an AP poll.
Yeah, I think that's slotted right now for me.
Love that. Okay, new top five: Sawgrass at one, Pebble at two, Harbortown three, PJ National four, Riv at five. Where are we going with Colonial?
Colonial. Oh gosh, I would say it's. I think Copperhead's better than Colonial. I think YY is. I would say YY is put it in between YY and Innisbrook. I would say.
All right. That's a 10 on your current list. Muirfield Village.
Muirfield Village was always one of my favorites, but there's just a couple holes that
like,
really
was it 16 you didn't love.
Yes, it's one of my favorite to play. It's one of my favorite to watch. It's one of the best crowds. So there's so many good things mm-hmm. that I like about Memorial, but there's just like, it's so close to being like near the very top of this list, but it's gonna be probably right in front of Riviera at 5.
Wow, that is big stuff. I
where would you have gone there?
No, I think it's not that I don't it's not that I disagree with that ranking. It's just funny to see like Riv beneath Muirfield Village. I mean, I guess they're both courses of high stature. Just people hold Riv in such high regard.
I don't know. I just think about events I've watched over the years. You know, like, yes, 18's a really cool setting at Riv, but you know, I have more memories of watching things happen at Muirfield Village on that 14th hole, and of course the chipping at 16 with Tiger. I just think there's been more moments I think of. I was one of my favorite golf courses to play on tour, and yeah, I like where it's at now.
Okay, great. So our new top 5: Sawgrass 1, Pebble 2, Harbortown 3, PGA National 4, Muirfield Village 5. Next up is TPC River Highlands.
Interesting. Okay. It's a really good, really fun back nine. Front nine's kind of blah, and it's actually the front nine really is very boring to me. The back nine has so much fun to it. And I enjoy watching it on TV too, because of all the craziness that can happen on that back nine.
Mm-hmm. Climate protesters.
I think it has more excitement than Tampa. Okay. And I like it a little less than Bay Hill. So right in between Bay Hill and Copperhead, TPC River Highlands.
Grab this right here. All right. Perfect. So that's new number 10 on your list.
Yeah.
Now Detroit Golf Club, side of the Rocket Mortgage.
It's or no, good.
The Rocket. They're just calling it the Rocket Classic now.
Yeah. Let's see. Can you scroll down a little bit for me? So it's, yeah, put it right above, right below Kapalua and above TPC Louisiana.
Oh, interesting. A Donald Ross course that low.
It's just kind of,
yeah,
it's pretty boring.
No, fair.
Pretty boring to watch. I enjoy playing it. I actually didn't mind playing it, but it's, yeah, it hadn't done like crazy things for me.
All right. How about TPC Deer Run next?
TPC Deer Run. I mean, it's just a birdie fest, man. So it's, you got to shoot 30 under that week. I like it. Probably, I would say it's right around that Detroit for me. So right below that.
Right below Detroit. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then going overseas to the one recurring venue for the Scottish Open, a co-sanctioned event, the Renaissance Club.
Yeah. Sorry, it's kind of hard to see this list at this point. There's just so much going on here, like where I would slot it in.
Well, here, Craig Ranch is the bottom at 23.
An okay links golf course. So it's really hard to compare. Like, there's no other links course we're kind of comparing these two. But I don't think there's a whole lot to this place that brings back any type of nostalgia for anybody, because it's such a new event. So I think people are still trying to figure it out as far as just what this course really is and if it's a good viewing golf course. I've been out to it. It's pretty good. It's probably middle of the pack for me. I would probably put it below YY and above the stadium course of Pete Dye.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's completely fair. Just to stop down here a little bit, because I understand and I'm greatly appreciative of the people that own this club that paid lots of money to support this event and, you know, Genesis and everything. And this is, but how are you playing the Scottish Open at a brand new design course when you have a whole country of historic courses?
Yeah.
I mean, how does it not go to some of these other places? It is one of the most nonsensical things that I've ever encountered in the game of golf. Like, with all due respect,
but it's good. I mean, it's not what we could play.
Right? Go anywhere else, go to Carnoustie, go to St. Andrews. Like, just, I mean, the list goes on and on and on and on. I understand that the economics that land this event, this place, just doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah.
TPC Twin Cities.
Ooh, a lot of water on that place, but it's going to be on the lower side here. It's I would say put it right above TVC San Antonio and below Scottsdale.
Okay. All right. Right there. A couple TBCs in a row. Just three more left here on our list. Okay. Sedgefield Country Club.
Yeah, it's a fun course to play. I mean, if it weren't for the drama of it being the last event, I think it would be very back of the pack as far as just golf courses go on tour, which is probably where I'm going to slot it. And that's going to be we're going to put that above Detroit Golf Club. I like it a little bit more.
Sticking the two Donald Rosses together. I like that.
But that's not surprising. Donald Ross courses for me, just I've never rated Donald Ross courses as high as other people. That's just my preference.
But you love Hope Valley though, right? You just love Hope Valley.
Here you go. That's right.
Home of the Durham Open that Byron Nelson was. So how about that? All right. Two more here. TPC Southwind.
Why is that not ringing a bell? Where is this?
Memphis.
It's like, where is this? Sorry, we're so far down in this. Man, it's really good. Really good. Super underrated. So let's move our way up. It's in the top half for me. It's better than Colonial, better than TPC River Highlands. Let's put it right there, right below Bay Hill.
Right below Bay Hill. So that would make it the second highest rated TPC outside of Sawgrass. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, and then finally, East Lake Golf Club.
Well, I only know what I've seen from this past year, so I'm rating it based off of that, where I know other events I've kind of rated based off of events that I've watched there in the past as kids. And East Lake, I always thought was terrible to watch on TV. Mm. I obviously didn't get that experience this year watching it on TV as I was working the broadcast, but it's above middle of the pack. It's definitely not in the top 10 for me. It's going to be probably in that range of, is it better than, I don't think it's as good as TPC Southwind. I think TPC River Highlands, it's better than, so let's slot it right in between there.
Right at 11th. Okay. So this is it. We've completed the list now. This is fascinating to look back at this. So at number one of the recurring tour venues on Smiley's rankings list, TPC Sawgrass. Two is Pebble Beach, and you made the important distinction of this is Pebble Beach and AT&T Pro-Am conditions. If it was a U.S. Open, Pebble might be number one on that list. Three, Harbor Town. Four, PGA National. Five, Muirfield Village. That's the top five.
And I think that's the problem is with this list, when people are going to see it, they're going to heavily debate PGA National. But if you put a really good field at PGA National, I think it has a different perspective. It's just they just hadn't gotten the field, you know?
Well, and let's go five more there and just, you know, Riv at six, Torrey Pines at seven, Quail Hollow at eight, Bay Hill at nine, and TPC Southwind at 10. This is your list. People can debate this. I mean, if those are the top 10 courses you're playing on the PGA Tour, you know, do you think that is room for criticism or change or
solid,
you know,
man.
I think that's a solid list.
I think it's a really dang good top 10. I mean, yes, like, I think what you're going to really see is at the bottom half in the middle is where you kind of debate. It's like, all right, where can we get better here? And I think that's where we really see it. Like, I think the drop off point for me is when you look at, you got a pretty good run there. Go from like TPC River Highlands. You got Copperhead, which is a great venue. Colonial, which just had some changes, but Colonial Wailea, I think, are both really enjoyable watches for what the golf courses are, as far as not as much length, the history behind the places, and the scores that typically aren't quite as low as what you think it would be. But then you kind of get to, this is where I get to the spot of like, okay, this is kind of no man's land of like, if you have the right weather that week or the right leaderboard, it's a good week. And that's like this little stretch here of the Renaissance Club, the Pete Dye Stadium Golf Course, which is the Amex, TPC Scottsdale, which we always will turn the TV on just because of the hoopla. But I think why that's so low on my list is because people don't see like the other holes. A lot of TV just kind of shows the back nine, which is really a fantastic back nine, but the front's so blah. But then you just kind of run into that TPC stretch, Charlie, of TPC Twin Cities. Can you scroll for me just a little bit down?
Absolutely.
Yeah, TPC Twin Cities, TPC San Antonio, and then Kapalua, which is a visually incredible place, but I think everybody's tired of the low scores that place continues to have.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think, you know, in looking at the bottom of this list, that there are some that, at least the way you're evaluating and rating this list, which I find interesting, is you're actually, you're throwing out who designed it. You're throwing out history. You're evaluating this on, does it produce interesting tournaments? And is it, you know, is it a compelling golf course in terms of, you know, creating good leaderboards and good competition?
And I think crowds that's, too. Like I think a lot about what places to get supported.
Yeah.
Because if this, like the reason like Vedanta is like a, it's a pretty good golf course. Like you got to hit a long, you got to stripe your nug out there in some wind and it's a, you know, a lot of mid irons. So it's a challenging golf course, but I mean, hey, nobody's out there.
Sure.
I think that's like one of my biggest things about LIV is a lot of these events, not that, you know, they get some terrible crowds overseas. And that's to me is when there's not juice, it's really, you know, you feel that on the ground and then you feel it through the TV.
Well, I think Rory's criteria, and this can take us, you know, into Rory's play this week. But I mean, I think his being is it a major storyline or talking point throughout the week leading into Thursday? And I think that, you know, as interesting as PGA National is for all the reasons you listed, there aren't like a million write ups leading into the week about this specific hole on PGA National or this specific shot. And maybe that's the fault of the media or the people breaking this down. And I'm sure you can find that in places like, you know, the Fried Egg and you know, other, like you can find those types of things. But I think just, you know, there, it's a mix of, you know, name brand that they get people interested to tune in with, you know, interesting outcome. You know, kind of like RIV. I think a lot of people would have RIV higher on this list just because they know it and because it has the history. Well,
it's,
but you could,
but
it's
really
point,
good. But yeah. It's I just can't think of many moments watching RIV as a kid and even over the last decade of moments or shots that come to mind besides shots at the 18th hole. Like very rare, like rarely do I think of something from 17, even the 16th, the par three, which is a really good par three, but I don't really, there's nothing that comes to mind. It's a really great hole. 15's a really good hard hole, but I don't know. I know when you play Riviera, it's incredible. But just, I know that it just doesn't do it for me on TV. What would be your top five as far as this list goes?
If I'm looking through and I'm doing a similar exercise to you, I'd say my top five would probably be, I'd probably go Pebble one. I would probably go Sawgrass two. It'd be very similar. I'd probably go Riv three. I'd probably go Harbor Town four and I would go East Lake five.
Wow.
Yeah. And I just think, you know, and a lot of that too is just my, I mean, I'm a Donald Ross homer, as you all know, you know, just the history, his history as an architect in this country. You know, so I get excited to go see that type of golf. And now you got Andrew Green who kind of regrassed it and modernized it in a way. I understand why to some people it's not visually compelling, but I'll say it this way, that I'm in looking at this through the Rory lens, like I'm excited to read think pieces in the week leading up to the Tour Championship about the way East Lake plays. I'm not that way with a lot of other courses. And I think, and that's omitting Torrey. Like you could make a case for Torrey, but I think Torrey's like the best version of Kapalua. Great visuals, but then when it comes to the golf course itself, it leaves a little bit to be desired, you know, but it's also,
I'll fill in the
great
blanks
outcomes
with you though. On that is like how good you have to be. Like Kapalua is just wedges, man.
Yeah.
Like all it is just wedges.
Torrey's hard. Yeah.
With Torrey, you're hitting middle irons
totally.
In 55 degrees to smaller greens, and Kapalua's got the biggest greens. So that comparison visually makes sense. But from a golf course standpoint, the challenges of that place, I think if there was just a little bit more danger factor in Torrey, to kind of get you on the edge of your seat besides just the 18th hole, I think it probably would be a little higher up on the list for me because I love Torrey Pines.
Well, this
playing
was
at least.
this was a good, fun, extended exercise. I'm definitely going to get Jackson to work up a little panel, put this out on social media, have people embrace debate here, chime in with their thoughts, you know, make sure they get the full context of what you talked about. But I think this is, I just think it's a little bit of diversion from our regular talk, but this is a key piece of, you know, and there were comments this week. We heard, you know, Justin Thomas talk about his letter and just the things he wants to see different about the broadcast. We've been talking a lot about the PGA Tour product. The tour themselves have done an audit on you know, just the ways in which they want to get better. And this is a key piece of this whole thing that Rory brought up. So I just was curious to get your thoughts on that. And yeah, did not disappoint with that list. Lots of hot takes there.
I think Riv's probably this the hottest take. And I think PGA National yeah. will probably be sneaking up there. Probably has people confused a little bit, but it's so good as far as just the challenges. Yeah.
So let's get to Rory this week. And I'll start with this. This is another, and I hope I'm not betraying Rasmus's confidence, but he said this like three or four times. And I loved it. He was just said he got to the tee at 14 at Pebble. And he's just looking up at the line that Rory's taking over that tree. And he just gets a smile on his face, starts laughing. He's like, I just don't see it. I just don't see that line there. And I think that was just all week long. The clubs, you know, when he was hitting driver on 18, the clubs he was hitting in there, the lines he was taking. And for me, it was just marveling at a Rory that we see him hit the ball far, you know, all the time. But I don't know why it was this week. I mean, it was like I think on 14 today, it was like a 340 carry off the tee over that tree on 14. It doing insane sorts of things and then capping off with a win at a place that he hasn't played a lot and hasn't necessarily played well when he has played years. So just your reactions on the way Rory played this week and, you know, what you're seeing in his game that indicates to you like this could be a year where he could win some big events and maybe win a couple majors.
Well, I think with Rory, it was really impressive. I think showing up, you kind of knew what you had to do, which was shoot somewhere between 4 to 6 under and hope nobody else got hot. Playing with Sepp Straka, who had a one shot lead, didn't have his best day, and Shane Lowry, good buddy. So a really comfortable Ryder Cup European pairing in that final group. But I just felt like Rory's back nine was just, he hit all of the right shots. And when he drove it in that fairway bunker at 10, he had a 6-iron from 178 with the little lip he had to go over and hit this like hold fade up against this in off the right wind to 20 feet, makes the putt for birdie. And then 12, which I think is a par hole, par three out at Pebble. He stuffs it right after Shane Lowry hit a beautiful one in there and makes a birdie. So right then and there, you know, when you're up near the top of the leaderboard, he hit the shots, man. Like that's like understanding, you know, what you got to do on a Sunday to win a golf tournament. We talk all the time about, you know, what's it take for a guy to go win, you know, to get over the hump, whether it's a Colin Morikawa, this or that. It's hitting shots like this on a back nine on a Sunday. And he hit three of them, man. It's that fairway bunker shot at 10, the iron shot he hit at 12, and then the drive he hit at 14. You know, when you hit fly at 338 yards and taking a line like you're talking about that Rasmus said, I don't see it. Well, nobody else does either. So hitting
and
seven
Rasmus
iron,
is not short. He is not a short player. Rory's on a different planet.
It's just having that gear it's insane. Part of, you know, every part of me is like, is this good for Pebble Beach that somebody's hitting a 7-iron into the screen? Like, do we want that? Or are we kind of like, this is awesome? I'm kind of like in between there because I do love how that 14th hole at Pebble is like the kind of best should be risk reward of should I hit a driver and try to push a 3-wood up in this small little area with OB working to the right. And when you hit a drive like that, it's like, oh, all right, not a whole lot of trouble with the 7-iron in your hands, because that outlier with a 7-iron versus a 3-wood's a way, way different.
Well, and I think that's a whole interesting side discussion, piggybacking on the venue thing of, you know, if we're talking about venues like this that have name recognition, you know, it's the same thing as talking about, do we keep taking St. Andrews back to, or to keep taking the Open back to St. Andrews. And I think they just awarded St. Andrews the Open in, was it 27 or 27? And same year where Pebble Beach is going to host the U.S. Open. So you might have two tournaments where the winning score at a major is a lot deeper than maybe most people would like it to be.
Well, just think about what Pebble's done in the past, though, like for the US Open. It's even, I mean, they've had an even par for that deal. Yeah. So besides, what is it? The famous one where Tiger Woods was anybody else under par that week?
I think it was it like two under? I think it was like maybe two players under par that week, or maybe it was it was over par. I think that was the now I want to look up the leaderboard. I want to say it was like,
I don't think anybody
he
shot
was
under
at 12. Par. I think he was at 12, and then I think second place was at 3 over.
That's right.
I think that's correct.
Sounds more right.
Yes, that's exactly what it was. It was Tiger at 12 under. Ernie and Miguel Angel Jimenez.
Yeah. So with that being said, though, you know, just about potentially St. Andrews and Pebble Beach being way under par, just remember we do have a little bit of a history of knowing, you know, like, all right, so Graham McDowell was, I think he was over par in winning at Pebble Beach, and then obviously Tiger blitzed the place, but the guys hit it so far now, and they're able to do so much with their equipment, technology, with how much better it's gotten over the years, and it's, you know, the quality of player too. I mean, with this technology, they just are able to, whether it's overpower a golf course or just be that much tighter with their games.
So just because we use so much time on the course discussion, moving to some other guys in the field this week of note, Scottie Scheffler, first time we've seen him this year after the whole hand surgery situation. We found out we were both wrong. We were guessing earlier. He was making ravioli, which I did not have anywhere near. That was like off the board. And then Rory suggested that he get a chef. And then I think Scottie said something to the effect of like, I do have a chef. She's pretty cute. Her name's Meredith or something like that. It's pretty hilarious. But Scottie, you know, was, I think the thing I was most interested in is, you know, what is he going to stick to that saw claw putting grip on those shorter putts? He was using that this week.
Yeah,
so he stuck
to that. Good too, right?
He was positive. He was 0.48 strokes gained putting in the positive. He lost some strokes around the green to the field. Well, his best category was approach, not a shocker. He was positive off the tee and a T9 at 15 under. So, I mean, I think for his first event back, when you're going to be knocking some rust off, you know, that passed the eye test for me. What do you think of the way Scottie played this week?
Well, a lot of normal for Scottie, which is iron game was good, putty good. The around the green thing's a little interesting. I kind of want to go a little bit more in depth to that to see exactly what it was that was a little off. I'm going to actually pull up my shot link now just to see if there's maybe some like outlier shot that skewed the stats for him to see why it was so low, because still he finished T9, you know, only six shots off the pace. But as far as just grading his performance, I mean, I think you just say solid B, I don't think anything to worry about with Scottie. I think if anything, going into Phoenix next week, a place that he's already won before and plays well at, I don't see anybody beating Scottie next week.
I almost want to wait a week and pick him at like a Torrey Pines, but
who's beating him next week?
I think if that's what you're seeing and you know, again, maybe you'll dig further into shot link, but you know, the first thing that goes right is the short game of the putting. When you have a little bit of rust, I mean, he said that even in periods when he's taken time off, he's still hitting golf balls. He could not hit golf balls because he has surgery on his right hand. Also couldn't change diapers. Also couldn't work out among other things. But so, I mean, for him, it was a real step away from, you know, just hit what he's done for years now in the game of golf. So I, you know, that doesn't shock me a ton. So to play as good as he did, and then to go to a place where he's won multiple times at Scottsdale, I do like him a lot this next week.
Yeah. So good start for Scottie. And are we going to talk about our one and done picks too? We're kind of like at that some point we're going to have to get into that, right?
Do we have to get into that? I'm at the point now where I'm looking at my son tonight and I'm like, I'm just going to bring Walker up here and just point at a board and I'm going to have him like pick my one and done guys. I think let's see here. I think I got top 20. Last I checked, I think Batia and Hoagie were top 20. Dietrich kind of petered off. Ludwig, I'd like to like redeem my additional three rounds later this year and then just like plug in a fourth round for someone else. Yeah, we can't get it right, man. Cannot get it right.
Oh, we can't. And just I just pulled up the shot link for Scotty, and the one statistic that stands out with the around the green stats was that he was 3 for 9 in out of the bunkers this week. So that's pretty poor. Now, I know Pebble Beach, you can get short-sighted, so maybe a little bit of course management issues there. I can look a little bit more in depth to that just to see exactly where he was leaving and missing it. But it could be a part of sometimes you hit good bunker shots and just happen to miss. That'd be the putt that you miss. But sometimes those get a little skewed, but it seems like his bunker game was a little off last week.
One that we regretfully have to touch on, but we do have to touch on it because he's a friend of the show. He came on, I guess, in our first year in 23, and also a friend of Scotty Scheffler's, is the Tom Kim slow play drum beat grows louder and louder every week, to the point now that is that they're making overt references to it on the broadcast. There was a his approach shot at the par 5-6 at Pebble Beach, just to refresh your memory. It's the one where it's that dramatic uphill blind shot. After they kind of hit a drive off the tee with the water on the right hand side, he was standing over that ball for well more over the 40 seconds he's allotted, and then proceeded to blow it right into the hazard area. And I think that the quote was wasn't really worth the wait. There was that shot, and then of course, or not worth the wait was the quote. And then on 18T, after hitting it in the water, OB actually didn't see his first tee shot. He was re-teeing, hitting his third. And I think Tim Nance said some of the effect of, you know, he's now hitting his third. And then we were waiting. He's like, at least I think he's going to hit his third. He should be hitting his third there. So, how do we approach this, Smiley? Because the other thing I read, and just in talking about the PGA Tour product and just the changes they're hoping to make, is that they have privately a stat for time per shot for every player on tour. And they've handed out fines behind closed doors, and they're trying to work with guys to get them to speed up. They're slow. They've tried all this stuff, but they're discussing making some of this stuff public now. Now that it's more and more, there's more and more of complaints about this. So, I mean, what are your thoughts on the issue specifically as it relates to Tom Kim, and what you'd like to see happen publicly to start really addressing slow play, because people are not happy with it right now?
Well, we'll use Tom Kim, obviously, because he's the person this week, but there's plenty of other guys that have to get faster. Tom definitely is more deliberate in his conversations, always has been since he's been on tour. I just think about Joe Skavern, when those two started working together, how their conversations always seem to just keep on going and going back and forth, which I personally, as a player, I love. And that's some of the best part of TV. I think when guys mosey around and take too long to get, the routines set up before they even do anything, that's the part that bothers me as a player. It's like, I understand some guys, like right now, Tom is having issues over the golf ball, pulling the trigger. Like, it's pretty obvious. Like, it's just, he just can't like 1-2 go. It's something that he hasn't shown that he cares enough to like really work on. He may be working on it, but just can't do it in competition. But it sure seems like to me that he either one is mentally struggling with that, or two just is like, hey, I'm just going to go at my speed. And if that's the case, right, like that's what we want to, try to change, because that's the type of stuff. We just need guys working on it. And hey, he might be working on it, and it could be really difficult for him. Like, I've had issues in my day where it feels like it's going so much faster over the golf ball before you pull it back. And I'll see a video and I'm like, I looked at the hole 8 times before I pulled it off, like pulled the club back. And a lot of times it was fighting my setup and like over the golf ball, just trying to figure out, it's like, all right, how are we going to hit this thing straight with like how crappy this feels over the ball right now? And I imagine Tom maybe is not dealing maybe quite with that level of it, but there is something to be said about how sometimes it is difficult to just go 1-2, pull the trigger.
Here is, and I'm not equating real PGA Tour events to TGL, but is it interesting to you at all that he just came off an event this last week where he had a 40-second shot clock for all of his full shots, and he hit every single one of them well underneath that allotted time limit? Like, I know it's different. I know it's you know, looking at a real visual target and how that plays with your mind and trying to figure out when you're ready to go, when you're ready to commit to a certain shot shape and a feel and everything like that. And it's very different on the simulator. Maybe he just cares less because it doesn't matter as much. But is that interesting or weird to you at all that he could do it in that setting?
No, I don't. I still feel like this isn't one of our biggest problems on the tour. I just think everybody's talking about it right now. Yes, everybody needs to play faster. The tour needs to figure out a little better system, because there's nothing more frustrating as a player is if I get a 2-stroke penalty and then 2 holes later, we're waiting on a group. It's just like, you know, you pay to play to the pace of what's in front of you. So like if I see open air in front of me, that's when we get going. When there's, you know, if we're going to be waiting on the next hole, like, Tom Kim, the story behind all this today, for all we know, they were waiting the first 5 or 6 holes. And that, why would you play quickly at that point? So there's that aspect of it of yes, it's, we need to get these guys to play faster, but also there needs to be much more of an emphasis on that certain stroke, every single shot, where there is some form of clock that you're able to go back on, that you take averages at the end of the day, to where over time, instead of just that day, just trying to get into position, it's like, okay, no, you're just a slow player and we need you to be quicker. And whether that's stroking guys or finding them publicly, two good options there. The tour definitely needs to take a stance on it and kind of act quickly, it feels like.
It is actually interesting to me as we think about this and talk about this that, and maybe they've been discouraged as broadcast partners to the tour from doing this, but if they're vocally critical of the pace of play, these guys on the broadcast, we've all seen that graphic a ton of times where it's the overhead of the golf course and it's every group pinpointed of where they stand. Yeah,
they were slow. I think they got put on, like, the clock today. Him and Rosie both were pretty slow.
I mean, if that's a situation, it works both ways. Like, if they're playing slow, but there's a group in front of them and you show that map and that group is just up, you know, on the next tee or on the green or something, then you're less critical of them. If they're a hole and a half that's open in front of them and they're sitting back there, those guys are the problem. So, I mean, that's one way visually, if we're talking about public ways to create awareness of, like, not only just the problem itself, but like what's the actual problem. That's one way that broadcasters could do it if they're already going so far as to critique players, I think, you know, openly.
The fans are going to get so excited. The first 2-shot penalty that comes across Twitter, it says this person was penalized 2 strokes for slow play. And it would send waves across the locker room as far as like, okay, they're actually going to start doing it now. Because that's the only way to get guys to change. Because until you do that, it's now they are making changes, right, to try to get guys around quicker, maybe a bigger tee time gaps. So I'm hoping that's something that happens. But threesomes takes more longer to play. It's no excuse, but it's fun watching Rory play golf. He's fast, and you could definitely feel that on 18th hole. It's like, why are we waiting here? And of course, it's Tom. It was kind of a tough scene, I guess, because he definitely has been labeled, him and Cantlay and Harmon with all of his looks, have been kind of labeled as the slow play guys, but there's so many guys that could get better.
Yeah, and I think you even heard people say, you know, about a lot of these guys, kind of to your point of what you're seeing on TV versus what's actually happening, is that Cantlay's a guy that will have all his conversations while other guys are getting ready and hitting and playing, and then he takes time over the ball.
Yeah, it's what you see with TV. It's like they come there live when they're hitting.
If you do your work ahead of time, then it's not compounding the issue in a
way.
That's
right.
So that, I think we'll wrap it there on the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am. Looking forward to the
I think we got to say, just like, shout out to Shane Lowry. Big week.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I really felt like Shane just continues to play like high level golf. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, you just got to continue to not rule him out of anything. Whether it's a big event, majors, he's a big time player. Expect him to see a Bethpage again on this Ryder Cup team. Justin Rose, another guy. These were two guys I liked heading into the week. Of course, I didn't pick I picked Cantlay. He finished middle of the pack, and Rose had a really nice week. That finish at 18 with little fairway wood, making an eagle. That's a lot of points, a lot of money. And then the wizardry from Cameron Davis at 18, if you happen to be watching the coverage, they go down to him and he's by that iconic tree, just short right, a ball up against the roots, and you're like, what is he going to do here? And then I looked away, and then I see a ball spinning back towards the hole. It's like, did he just hit that? Like, and spin it back, and then I see the replay. I was like, that is legit Harry Potter sorcery. I have no idea how he did this.
That was so sick. I was worried for his wrist when he addressed the ball. Yeah. Like, I don't know how he's gonna get a club on that. And then second of all, is he gonna just dump in the bunker and send the broadcast, or is he gonna blow it over and he stops it inches away? And also on the Shane topic, guy has the sickest list of hole in one of all time.
Oh gosh,
7 at Pebble, 17 at Sawgrass, 16 at Augusta National. And this came in the same week as Rory aced 15 at Spy that you almost aced last year. Almost aced last year. Well, so good week for aces and near miss aces.
I was thinking, like, what is the next place that Shane can go get a hole in one? I guess 16 next week at Waste Management would be a place if he's going to play next week. But then the other ones, I tweeted this out. I think it was Calamity Corner at Port Rush this year. That's an option.
Okay.
Troon obviously would be postage one, but that's champ, so far away. The postage stamp would be another iconic hole in one. I'm trying to remember, there's one other hole in one as far as just a Mount Rushmore of a list that he can, like, he just needs one other iconic hole in one and he's got it.
He's got the Rushmore.
I would say that, like, it would be like 12 at Augusta, but I don't think two holes in ones at the same course should count. Like, on a Mount Rushmore, it needs to be different golf courses.
Agreed.
So I said Calamity Corner at Port Rush. That's coming up. And then there was one other one. St. Andrews 11th hole there, the Eagle hole. I think that's a pretty famous one. Would be another talk
about. As an Irishman, he needs an Open Championship ace, I think, to fill out his – it's only right to fill out his Mount Rushmore. So that was pretty awesome. A fun week there, and headed to Waste Management next.
There was actually one other thing, Charlie, that I hate to – sorry, you keep wanting to put a bow, and I keep having one thing I look at like, shoot, we have to talk about this.
Okay.
Is the unfortunate coverage gap that happens at Pebble Beach.
Yes. Yeah.
It is unfortunate. It is very unfortunate where the 7th hole and TV slots and when they finish and sunset, that just happens to be in that 15-minute window where Golf Channel and CBS switch out. And just to explain this to everybody, how this works, CBS is producing the Golf Channel show with Golf Channel talent. And so instead of, like, I guess if Golf Channel was producing it, all the CBS people would come in, but they all are in their chairs. But so now they're just doing a change out of talent of getting Jim Nantz up there, Trevor Immelman up there, whether it's Ian Baker, Finch to their Inablo to their different spots, getting all the walkers out in position, which can be done quickly. It can be done in 5 or so minutes. But the problem is, coming onto the air, they haven't rehearsed anything. So they don't know what the highlights are going to be because their producer is currently producing the Golf Channel show. But, you know, in a perfect world, you wouldn't have that 15-minute coverage gap to where you would like Golf Channel just to take it all the way up to the end, which they do. But it's...
Well, I mean, you and I were talking about this off air before the show, and I told you that the last time, so I didn't miss any of the coverage because as soon as it changed on Golf Channel, and then I flipped over to CBS and realized it's a college basketball game on.
College basketball game's on. That's what happened this time.
I used the CBS Sports app for the first time since Ricky won the Rocket Mortgage, and I saw them play, you know, the 7th and everything. So I think that it's, but most people, 99.99% of people did not do that.
And
so it's a tough scene to miss those holes. I think that, like, I'm okay with the coverage gap almost every week, but this is one of those situations where whether they, like, let's just, if we're going to have a basketball game run long on CBS, let's just have the golf coverage run long on golf, whatever events following on Golf Channel. Like, guys, we'll get to it when we get to it, but it's not the PGA Tour. So, you know, unless it's like an LPGA major or, you know, like some other ridiculously important event. You're
saying Golf Channel keep it?
Golf Channel keep it. Like, I mean, we are not going to miss.
I'm sure there's like a contract thing there, because
we will write something into the contract.
The problem is that CBS does come live. Like, it's, you know, they do their live opening on CBS dot or all their CBS things. So we are on live for everyone. If you can get there, and then we'll fill you in when we come on to CBS. I'm not sure what their opener looked like.
I'm sure it was just straight out to golf versus their normal open, just like welcoming everybody from this basketball game. So they got to come open. They got to come on air when they're supposed to, which is unfortunate that game kept going.
Well, just simulcast that on Golf Channel. Whatever it is, like the answer can't be we miss the leaders playing the seventh hole at Pebble Beach. Like that's never an answer in my book. You know, whatever happens. I mean,
it only happens with the CBS because Golf Channel NBC, like we're not gonna have issues with that because if there's a NASCAR race on NBC, like we'll just keep it on Golf Channel and you don't miss it.
Right.
So that is like the one nice thing of that week you don't ever have. Like
do you think that changes?
You miss it on TV.
Do you think that changes with Golf Channel being spun off from NBC at all? I mean, I don't know.
That's a whole nother can of worms. I don't even know. I think even with somebody like me who should be more in the know, I still don't know. So nothing to report there.
I saw something written this week where it was it sounded like the comments from whoever heads the department was that we're definitely going to be a standalone entity. But there's still going to be lots of synergistic connection because, you know, it's been set up that way for so many years. Now, if it gets, depending on who gets sold to, maybe that changes. But at least right now, I think that's the most synergistic you're going to feel Golf Channel to any other network is going to be NBC. So interesting stuff there. Shout out to your boy, Ollie Snyder-Jantz, your contemporary.
Yes.
Big win in India. By the way, this golf course looked nuts.
Yeah. It looks really like visually weird and like a weird layout from just some of the shots that I saw on Twitter, because it was kind of a story, obviously Bryson being there playing in India, which I mean, it's no different to me than like what these other events kind of used to be like, as far as just, you know, you'd have top guys go show up at events. They get a bunch of money to come play and, you know, it was great for the event, and I don't see it how it's any different this week, but it seemed like Bryson changed the face of golf because he went to India to play, where like people have been playing, you know, these. No, yeah. I don't know. I just felt
one
like
down in South Africa.
I thought it was a little overhyped that he's going playing in India. Like, I think it's great. Yes, it's cool. Yeah. But let's not act like it's like this is the first top player to ever go play in a different country other than the United States. Like, plenty of PGA Tour guys been doing it, taking whether it's an appearance fee to come and play. It's happened for decades.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the biggest thing that I found interesting about it. This is by the way, it's a DLF Golf and Country Club in New Delhi, India. It's part of the Asian Tours International Series. It's just mainly that, you know, India is sort of a golf starved country, and we heard. I don't have his name off the top of my head, but just the CEO of Hero talk about bringing golf to India as part of that presser he did alongside Tiger Woods, the Hero this year. And just, you know, would love to have Tiger come back there at some point in time and just bringing that excitement to India because they are interested in high level golf. So I think it's very cool.
Yeah.
I'm not here
like fully dogging. It's more so just like that.
Let's not make it seem like this
is
the most.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Right, right. Like it's great. Great for the global state of the game. That's always important regardless. Sure. I mean, all the things that Liv are doing, playing in all these different countries. If 10 years from now it makes golf more popular, great. I don't love where professional the game is now with the Liv and PGA Tour, but 10 years from now, if golf is more popular, more people are watching, then I would say that's probably better for the game. But
Ollie's first win since the Korn Ferry Tour 2016 Air Capital Classic.
This guy's like super talented, like coming out of college. Like I hardly ever beat the guy. Everybody kind of felt the same way. He was the can't miss kid, the hatless Ollie, never wore a hat.
Still not wearing a hat.
Just like he would hit these stingers, man, that no other person could hit with ball speed. That's just insane. You're just like, how can you hit it this hard and hit it this low to the ground? That's the type of talent that Ollie had. He just was a can't miss kid. He was 41 weeks number one as an amateur. The only person to overthrow him in that was that's my dog barks. Apologies. Is
Rosie?
Yeah. What's up? with Bryson DeChambeau. He won the national championship, won the U.S. amateur, and dethroned him. But Ollie,
had double hip replacement 2022. And amazing. You just never knew if I was going to make it back to playing the professional game at a high level. So to see him win this week, he went to try to do the LIV qualifier, finished T5, which got him status on the Asian Tour, had no status coming into the year anywhere. So just really happy for Ollie. It's not easy to come back from injury, not easy to come back from, you know, not having any status. So it's kind of, you know, what we might see now, right? And you talked a little bit about this on another episode, just talking about the DP World Tour, where you see more American guys go over there. So it might just be different pathways that we have for guys to find their way back to the game's highest level. I hope there's a way in which that we can get the Taylor Gooches, the Peter Uhlheins, the eventual Van Ali Shanderjans, who I imagine is going to be feeding into the LIV at some point with his good play, or an Andy Ogletree. Like, I would love to see these young, talented American players like find their way back to the tour at some point. But, you know, Rory did say this week that a deal could get done quicker than he thinks, but we'll see. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is, you know, so Ollie did teed up in the LIV Golf Promotions Tour. I guess he had a joint fourth there that earned him a reserve spot and some of these exemptions. And then that's where, you know, he I guess one of the exemptions was here in India. And of course, he wins it. So I would not be shocked, because I think, you know, he's one of these guys that you have to be sort of a golf, you know, nerd or sicko to a certain point to know who he is. But people in the golf world know who this guy is. Class of 2011 recruit, you know, part of that class with Jordan Spieth, with Justin Thomas. So like it's not, you know, immediately, you know who he is. It's just you don't know where he went for all those years. And it's, you know, a double hip replacement, pretty significant in the list of injuries one can have when they're trying to play professional golf. So I think it would be cool for him to. And I think he's probably a guy, too, that let's say he gets some looks on LIV this year. This is not a guy that you're going to have a lot of vitriol around, because he's just someone who's trying to play his way back into the highest stage of the game, however it looks like, via the opportunities he's afforded. And if the way for him to do that is to play on the Asian Tour and get a reserve spot, like, no one's going to begrudge him, you know? Well,
it's what you got to do, man. Yeah. Like, I was still playing and I had an opportunity to go still try to have any form of status to provide. Dude, you got to do what you got to do.
100%. So cool seeing him win. I mean, this is we're close to an hour and 20 in here, which is longer than our usual episode time. So, you know, I know you're headed to Phoenix this next week. Excited about that. We have a great episode we're excited to drop this week with Joel Damon. Really, really cool conversation. That's not just golf. It's a lot of personal stuff. And I think you'll find that really interesting. Before we leave, I know you wanted to. You want to give us your takes on the Luka Doncic, Anthony Davis trade? Can I give you the floor here?
It just didn't make any sense, right? Like, if I was a Dallas Mavs fan, I would be so mad. I don't know exactly.
Can't stand it.
Rosie's not happy about it. And I know my wife's currently making dinner as we speak with a toddler, and Rosie's sitting here indoors. So we might have to save the full breakdown of Luka for another week. But just know, I think the Mavs got to be. I mean, it's much more of a win now deal with him. I don't know.
Does you think this wins LeBron's last chip? I think that's the one question we need you to answer.
What happens with LeBron? I don't know. We'll have to debate it.
It's very, very interesting. Although I'll say, I don't watch a ton of NBA. I'm kind of swearing off basketball. The way the Duke-Carolina game went Saturday night, I'm ready to not watch a lot of basketball for a while. That was, by the way, Cooper Flagg, go to basketball.
Yeah.
Very good at basketball.
Yes.
So that's really it. Look forward to, you know, Smiley, some content on site on the ground, TPC Scottsdale, which if I can just refresh here is Smiley's, let's see, it's Smiley's 18th best tour venue. So Smiley at the W of Phoenix Open.
It might be a little underrated. I don't know.
I'm sure you'll get some questions about that out on the grounds this week. And so look forward to that. Look forward to Joel Damon midweek. We appreciate you hanging out with us, watching, listening, and we'll talk to you back here very, very soon.
You know, I listen to this podcast. It's really cool. And
all of our lovely fans and subscribers, but make sure you like and subscribe.
It's cool to see what you guys are doing. I know golf fans appreciate it, but we do too. So please keep it up.
For all the good people of YouTube, like and subscribe.
You guys have some good takes, so I'm happy to come on and shoot the